Things aren't always as they appear, and some bombshells might be hiding in plain sight. I'm Katie Bilotti, and this is Found Objects, a storytelling history podcast. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Found Objects History Podcast with me, Katie Bilotti. Just a reminder, guys, this is the last episode of Found Objects Podcast for season one. I can't believe how many amazing stories we've been able to tell in the first season of this podcast, of this concept that is Found Objects. And I just want to thank you guys for being here, for loving it as much as me, you know, telling these stories. Just, it brings me so much joy. I love just like looking into things, of course, you know, digging in a little deeper, trying to find things where, you know, one might not think there is something, right? There's a story where people might think, oh, you know, that's all, you know, this is the story that I've heard a million times over in history class, and that's all there is to it. But there is more to really nearly every single realm of history. So anyway, thank you guys for being here. Really, really appreciate it. Today's episode, the final episode of season one, we're going to be focusing on not one, but two really interesting women from history and how I believe their stories are so similar. It's crazy. Like, it's like they're carbon copies of one another, but they're from very different times, very different places. And I really just want to show the similarities and just tell each of their stories, respective stories, and then, you know, also discuss the stigma slash, you know, what they're kind of known for and whether or not that's true. You know, kind of dig into, okay, you know, they have these stigmas surrounding them as people, and some people have a bad taste in their mouth, I'd say a lot of people do, about these two women. Is it warranted? You know, is it warranted? And, you know, the answer might be yes. The answer might be no. You have to listen to find out. And the two women we'll be talking about today are Imelda Marcos and Marie Antoinette. So without further ado, we're going to go back in time to the 1920s to kick things off. And then, later on in the story, we're going to go back even further to the 1700s. So, buckle up and let's go. It's often said that well-behaved women rarely make history. Well, that is the embodiment. That's honestly an understatement when it comes to two women we'll be talking about in today's episode. Imelda Marcos, the former First Lady of the Philippines, and Marie Antoinette, the last Queen of France before the French Revolution. You might know these women's stories, maybe one of them, maybe both of them. So you may not see it at first, but these women share a common narrative of luxury, influence, and eventual downfall. While they lived in very different times in very different countries, their lives existed in a strangely coincidental parallel. And today we're going to be talking about that. We'll look at the biographies of these powerful women in history and examine just how much their stories overlap. Like, there's a lot of similarities I'm not sure that many people know of between these two very interesting women. So we're going to dive into it. We're going to crack open the story right here, right now. The first woman of the hour is Imelda Romaldez, born on July 2nd, 1929, in Tacloban, a small town on the island of Leyte in the Philippines. She was the eldest of six children, born into a family that had social status but lacked wealth. Imelda's beauty became her first ticket to fame. In 1953, at the age of 24, she won the title of Rose of Tacloban, a local small beauty contest. This victory propelled Imelda into the public eye, and she quickly moved to Manila, the nation's capital, to pursue a higher profile. While many admired her poise and beauty, it was her marriage in 1954 that truly set Imelda on the path to power. She married Ferdinand Marcos, a rising star in Philippines politics, who had already served as a congressman and senator. And with Imelda by his side, Ferdinand would go on to become the president of the Philippines in 1965. So fast forward to her role as First Lady. As First Lady, Imelda held considerable influence. She was often referred to as the Steel Butterfly because of her mix of charm and steely determination. Imelda's public image shifted from that of a mere beauty queen to a powerful political and cultural figure, and she became known for her lavish spending, her extravagant parties, traveling internationally and amassing a collection of jewelry, art, and most famously, shoes. And you're kind of already, if you know the story of Marie Antoinette, you're probably already, the gears are turning. You're like, oh, wow, sounds familiar. We'll get there. The international press covered Imelda's life with fascination, often comparing her to royalty. Imelda was also a self-styled diplomat. In 1972, when Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law and transformed his presidency into a dictatorship, Imelda played a central role in maintaining the regime's image, both locally and abroad. She traveled the world on diplomatic missions, meeting with global leaders like U.S. presidents, the Pope, and Middle Eastern royalty. But beneath all of the glamour, the Philippines was suffering. While the Marcos family grew rich, of course, the country was descending into political repression, corruption, and economic despair. Under martial law, basic freedoms were taken away. People could no longer speak freely, could not criticize the government or protest. Newspapers, television, and radio were controlled by Marcos. Additionally, the military took over. Soldiers had more power and were used to enforce the law. Thousands of people, largely political opponents, were arrested without a fair trial, and some were tortured or just disappeared. Martial law allowed Marcos to rule like a dictator, keeping himself in power even when his term should have ended. The bottom line is that people were suffering. Unsurprisingly, there were numerous assassination attempts on both Ferdinand and Imelda as the regime became increasingly unpopular. And as a result, Imelda became highly concerned with her personal safety, especially during public appearances. And this is where the legendary bulletproof bra enters the narrative. So you may have heard of this. Imelda Marcos, famous for her, quote, bulletproof bra. So the exact origin of the story is kind of murky, but according to several accounts, Imelda Marcos had a specially made bra designed to be bulletproof. Again, she was having these assassination attempts or threats, and so she decided to equip herself with this. And the bra was allegedly part of her personal security measures to protect herself from these attempts during public events. It was said to be reinforced with lightweight bulletproof material, maybe similar to like a Kevlar, and the fabric, this is fabric that was commonly used in body armor. What makes the story particularly fascinating is the juxtaposition of function and fashion, right? We have to remember she's called the Steel Butterfly. Funny how she's constantly merging, you know, beautiful things, fashion with steel, with function. So it was a blend of her luxurious taste and the reality of living in a dangerous, politically charged environment. So she wore this thing to public events. I wonder how heavy it was. That's what I'm wondering. Like, I know it said lightweight bulletproof material, but I'm like, how heavy is this bra? You know, we all have like that like heavy padded bra that maybe we got back in the day that I'm like, wow, this is like kind of weighty, you know? So speaking of Imelda's extravagant wardrobe, of course, there was the infamous shoe collection. Another thing she was known for. We're not just going to talk about her fashion, by the way, but these are just like things that are circulating that I wanted to fact check. So speaking of Imelda's extravagant wardrobe, we have the shoes. And at this point, Imelda might as well have been synonymous with shoes because this luxury seems larger than life. When the Marcoses, so Imelda and Ferdinand, were finally ousted from power in 1986, the world was shocked by the discovery of Imelda's extravagant shoe collection. Estimates range between 1,000 and 3,000 pairs of shoes left behind at the palace. So they were living, residing at the palace. When they were ousted from power, they left the palace, and all of these shoes were left behind, 1,000 to 3,000 pairs. Most were designer, including brands like Ferragamo, Chanel, and Christian Dior, and they were neatly arranged in rooms that looked like personal boutiques. So if you think about it from like an aesthetic standpoint, it kind of looks like, if you see photos, Hannah Montana's revolving closet on steroids. For many, the shoes became a symbol of her excess, her spending despite hard times, her detachment from the struggles of ordinary Filipinos. In her own words, though, she claimed, quote, "I really had no great love for shoes. I was a working first lady. I was always in canvas shoes. I did nurture the shoe industry of the Philippines." Very funny way to put it. "And so every time there was a shoe fair, I would receive a pair of shoes as a token of gratitude." So she's claiming, oh my gosh, no. I was always in canvas shoes, never wearing my Christian Diors. These were all gifts. The question is, do you believe her? 1,000 to 3,000 pairs of shoes as gifts? Question mark. Interesting. By the 1980s, the Philippines was teetering on the brink of destruction. The assassination of opposition leader Ninoy Aquino, who was essentially the thorn in Ferdinand Marcos's side, so like the opposite of Ferdinand, he was assassinated in 1983, triggered a wave of anger against the Marcos regime. So he was killed. People were very upset because, again, the Marcos regime was very unpopular. So this kind of set the stage for the 1986 People Power Revolution, which was a nonviolent uprising that saw millions of Filipinos take to the streets demanding the end of Ferdinand Marcos's rule. So given all of this, the Marcos, again, were not very popular, so they fled. On February 25th, 1986, the Marcos family fled the Philippines for exile in Hawaii, just as Corazon Aquino, Ninoy's widow, was sworn in as the new president. Hence, Imelda's reign of extravagance coming to a crashing halt. While in exile in Hawaii, the Marcoses still lived in relative luxury, but of course their wealth and actions were under intense scrutiny. Imelda became famous for the legal battles over her fortune. Even as they faced charges of human rights abuses and corruption, the Marcoses maintained a narrative of innocence. In 1989, Ferdinand Marcos died in Hawaii, but that wasn't the end of the Marcos legacy or Imelda's ambitions. Imelda Marcos returned to the Philippines in 1991, just 2 years after Ferdinand's death. Many people thought she would disappear from public life, you know, slink away because, of course, she wasn't popular the last time she was there, but that was not her style. That was not how Imelda did things. Instead, she began a political comeback. Imelda ran for president in 1992, though she only came in fifth. However, Imelda was elected to Congress twice, in 1995 and again in 2010. Despite legal challenges and multiple court cases related to corruption, so yeah, the corruption has not left the narrative, the building, Imelda managed to evade jail time and her influence in the public landscape of the Philippines continued to be felt. More controversially, her son, Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr., has followed in his parents' footsteps, becoming a prominent politician in his own right. So Imelda has always remained a divisive figure. To some, especially those loyal to the Marcoses, Imelda is a woman of grace and beauty who only wanted to bring the Philippines into modernity. To others, she is the embodiment of greed and corruption, a symbol of the dark years of dictatorship. And of course, lavish spending, even though a lot of people were suffering. So fast forward to today, Imelda is 95 years old. She carries on today out of the public eye, but what is her legacy? She's a reminder of how power and privilege can distance leaders from the people that they govern. Her story is one of glamour and excess, but also of resilience and political savvy. You can love her, you can hate her. Imelda Marcos has left a mark on the Philippines. As we reflect on Imelda's life, you know, I, at least when I was reading about, you know, just the kind of top line terms of Imelda's life, her lavish spending, the way that, you know, she was first lady of a dictatorship, it was really reminding me of a different story of Marie Antoinette. And, you know, of course, we're reminded often that history is rarely black and white. And there are multiple tales that you often are like, wait a minute, this one was kind of like a cautionary tale that this other person should have, you know, known about, because then they just repeated the same mistakes as the previous person. And so when I was reading about Imelda Marcos's story, I was obviously drawn to, I drew parallels between her story and Marie Antoinette's story. Marie Antoinette being the last queen of France before the French Revolution. So let's talk about some similarities in their life stories. Before we get there, though, let's take a deep dive into Marie Antoinette's life, and then we will connect the two. Marie Antoinette was born on November 2nd, 1755, in Vienna, Austria, to one of the most powerful families in Europe. Her mother was Maria Theresa, the formidable Empress of the Holy Roman Empire, and Marie was the 15th of 16 children. Can you imagine? 16 children. At the age of 14, Marie's life changed forever. In 1770, she was sent to France to marry Louis Auguste, the heir to the French throne. The union was part of a political alliance between Austria and France designed to strengthen the two nations' ties. So imagine being a teenager, leaving behind everything you know, your family, your country, your culture, your friends, everything, and being thrust into one of the most rigid and judgmental courts in Europe. You're a teenager. Yeah, that was Marie Antoinette's life. Upon her arrival in the French court of Versailles, Marie Antoinette became Dauphine of France. Versailles was the epitome of opulence. You think golden halls, gardens that stretched for miles, and endless ceremonies of pomp and pageantry. But it was also a political minefield. The French court was rife with intrigue and gossip, and Marie was an outsider and a teenager, so she struggled to fit in at first. In 1774, Marie's husband ascended the throne as Louis XVI, making her Queen of France at the young age of just 18. With this new title came immense pressure and scrutiny. Marie Antoinette's every move was watched, and her actions quickly became the subject of rumor. At first, she was a popular figure. Her beauty, charm, and youthful energy was refreshing in the stiff, formal French court. But soon, the image of Marie Antoinette as a frivolous, extravagant queen began to emerge. She, of course, had a passion for fashion and luxury, you might have heard of this, which was seen by many as extravagant spending. Again, Imelda Marcos, Marie Antoinette, very similar. She was obsessed with her hairstyles, which reached towering heights, literally. Like her hair, if you've seen any sort of like remake, spin-off, homage to Marie Antoinette, you've definitely seen her huge hair. Her elaborate hairdos were famous for being over a foot tall and often decorated with all sorts of crazy things like miniature ships, flowers, feathers, and even a birdcage. One particularly famous style was called Pouf à la Belle Poile, which featured a replica of a ship to celebrate a French naval victory. Imagine trying to navigate through doorways, sitting for long stretches of time at like a dinner table with a huge ship on your head. Marie Antoinette's fashion choices were legendary, and so was the amount of money that she spent on clothes. She had a yearly budget for clothing that was equivalent to millions of dollars today, but she regularly exceeded it.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Which I just got chills, like millions, it's crazy. And before Imelda Marcos had her famous shoe collection, Marie Antoinette was also known for her love of shoes. She had hundreds of pairs, each more extravagant than the last. And again, this is in times when, you know, people had maybe one, two pairs of shoes. She had hundreds. And perhaps one of her weirdest quirks that I often think about more than I should. I don't know why I think about this often. I just do. I did a story on Marie Antoinette on my old podcast long, long ago, and I just have still clung on to this one specific detail, like just how crazy it is. Marie Antoinette really loved to kind of masquerade as a commoner. Like, she loved the idea of pretending to be common, even though she wasn't. Like, she was far from that, obviously. Her hundreds of pairs of shoes, slippers, just to walk around her bedroom in, you know. But she famously built a rustic village. Yeah, at her private estate. She built a village, like a miniature village, like this. It looked like the villages that she was, you know, presiding over in her, you know, place of royalty. Like, she was the queen of these villages where people were suffering on a daily basis. She built like replica of this, of their village. And she called it the Hameau de la Reine. And it was designed to look like a simple countryside farm where she and her friends would dress up like milkmaids and shepherdesses to pretend that they lived a simple pastoral life. But the funny part is that everything was still so over the top. Like, even these very, you know, they were trying to be rustic and like the people, like the commoners, but the milk was pre-boiled, the animals were washed, and even the peasants that they interacted with were paid actors. So yeah, it was all like a charade for them, all a joke, which is just chilling. Naturally, her elaborate hairstyles, expensive gowns, lavish shoe collections, and weird pastimes fueled resentment from the actual villagers, her actual constituents, especially as the country's economy worsened. But was she truly to blame for France's financial problems? The truth is a bit more complex. France was already in financial trouble long before Marie Antoinette entered the scene. The country was burdened with debt from years of war, specifically the Seven Years' War and France's support for the American Revolution. However, Marie's extravagant spending on luxuries didn't help her image. One infamous scandal tarnished her reputation beyond repair: the affair of the diamond necklace. So, let's talk about it. In 1785, a group of schemers, including a disgraced noblewoman, forged Marie Antoinette's name to get their hands on a highly valuable diamond necklace worth more than the annual income of France's most powerful nobles. Even though Marie had nothing to do with the plot, public opinion turned against her. The queen was seen as out of touch and careless with the nation's resources. So, Marie, to our knowledge, had never placed an order for this ridiculously expensive necklace. Someone forged her name and kind of created this scheme to get their hands on the necklace. But because Marie was seen to have ordered it, people were like, this woman is so out of touch, like, we hate her, you know? So just like further fueled the narrative that she was this frivolous, you know, crazy spender in a time when the nation was already so poor. The scandal played into the hands of her enemies, reinforcing the narrative that Marie was a wasteful and corrupt monarch. The French people began calling her Madame Deficit. Yeah, that's honestly iconic. Blaming her for the country's financial woes, even though the root causes were much deeper. By the late 1780s, France was on the brink of collapse. Famine, skyrocketing bread prices, and widespread poverty fueled anger among the people. At the same time, ideas of liberty, equality, and fraternity, inspired by the Enlightenment, were spreading across the nation. The monarchy, and particularly Marie Antoinette, became the focus of this rising resentment. And people's desire for true freedom, the infamous quote, "Let them eat cake," of course, we can't talk about Marie Antoinette without talking about that, was attributed to Marie Antoinette during this period. According to legend, when told that the peasants had no bread to eat, Marie allegedly responded by saying, "Let them eat cake," but there's no actual evidence that she ever said these words. In fact, the phrase had been circulating in France long before her reign, and yet it became emblematic of her supposed indifference to the people's suffering. So again, there's no tangible evidence to say that she said this. And also, I read somewhere that if she were to have said anything like this, she wouldn't have said cake. She would have said bread. Like, there's just all these conflicting reports and really no tangible evidence that she said this. Anyway, but of course, we associate that phrase with her. By 1789, the French Revolution was in full swing. The storming of Bastille marked the beginning of the end for the monarchy. The royal family's luxurious lifestyle became a glaring contrast to the growing poverty and unrest in the streets of Paris. On October 5th, 1789, an angry mob marched from Paris to Versailles demanding bread and obviously just being an angry mob. Fearing for their lives, the king and queen were forced to relocate to the Tuileries Palace in the heart of the capital, effectively becoming prisoners of the revolution. By this time, the monarchy's power had been severely weakened, and both Louis and Marie Antoinette were in constant fear for their safety. In 1791, they attempted to flee France, hoping to rally support from foreign monarchs and restore their rule. So they were like, can we go somewhere and like get some support from the other monarchs? Because we're struggling over here. But this plan ended in disaster. The royal family was recognized and captured before they could reach the Austrian border. The failed escape sealed their fate. Any remaining sympathy for the monarch evaporated, and the people now saw them as traitors to the revolution. Like, they were trying to flee and go somewhere else. And like, what the heck? No. Marie Antoinette's image as a foreigner, an outsider, and now even more dangerous as Austria was France's enemy, made her an even bigger target for revolutionary anger. As the revolution radicalized, the monarchy was abolished in 1792, and Louis was executed in January of 1793. Marie Antoinette, once the glamorous Queen of France, now faced a grim reality. She was next, after her husband. After the king's execution, Marie Antoinette was held in even harsher conditions, separated from her children, and subjected to intense scrutiny. In October of 1793, she was put on trial before the Revolutionary Tribunal, and the charges against her were numerous, ranging from treason to gross moral failings. The trial was a sham, a formality, rather than a legitimate legal process, and the outcome was pretty much already decided from the start. On October 16th, 1793, Marie Antoinette was found guilty and sentenced to death by guillotine, or guillotine, however you want to say it. I've heard it both ways. At 12:15 p.m., Marie Antoinette was led to the scaffold, dressed in a simple white gown, her once famous beauty and extravagance now stripped away. Her final words, allegedly, were an apology to her executioner after accidentally stepping on his foot. "Pardon me, sir, I did not mean to do it," she said, apparently. Marie Antoinette's execution marked the symbolic end of the old regime, the final chapter in the fall of the French monarchy. She was just 37 years old. Today, Marie Antoinette is remembered as a symbol of the excesses of the French monarchy, but her story is far more complex than the caricature of this heartless, out-of-touch queen. You know, sure, she lived a life of luxury, oftentimes out of touch, but she was also a young woman caught in the currents of history far beyond her control. Like, she didn't understand the depths of crisis that her country was facing, but neither did many of her contemporaries in the royal court. You know, people were kind of unaware of what was going on. They were in their bubble, so to speak. You know, unforgivable, really, but like, that's kind of just the truth of the matter. While this may not be entirely the case for Imelda Marcos, as she was fully aware of her political prowess, the pair, you know, share crazy similarities, though, in their extravagant lifestyles, the shoes of it all, public personas, and the roles that they played during pivotal moments of political upheaval. Let's look at the most obvious similarity first. Obviously, both Marie Antoinette and Imelda were the symbols of excess and decadence, with their personal extravagance set against the backdrop of widespread poverty and suffering in their countries. Marie was infamous for her indulgent lifestyle. Her spending on luxury was viewed as extravagant by the French people, who were suffering under economic hardship, food shortages, and rising taxes. And similarly, Imelda Marcos became notorious for her opulent spending, often at the expense of the struggling Filipino population. Her excess became a global scandal when the Marcos regime was ousted in 1986, and the famous shoes, 1,000 to 3,000 pairs, let's remember, were discovered in the presidential palace, which just kind of sealed and symbolized the disconnect from the reality of widespread poverty and economic decline in the Philippines, yet she was buying these shoes, even though she claims that they were gifts. In both cases, their luxurious lifestyles alienated them from the masses, contributing to the perception that they were out of touch with the real struggles of their people. but the reality was quite the contrary. You know, both Marie Antoinette and Imelda Marcos were notably more than just decorative figures in their respective courts. They had significant political influence, often taking an active role in shaping the direction of their husbands' governments. Though initially disinterested in politics, Marie Antoinette became involved in political affairs later in her reign, particularly as the French Revolution loomed. Her political influence, her close ties to Austria, led to perceptions that she was manipulating Louis and guiding France into disastrous decisions. Her involvement in foreign policies and her attempts to preserve the monarchy in the face of revolution contributed to her unpopularity. So she did mess around and try to do things, though a lot of people were like, sit down, like, don't do that, you know? Imelda was a key player in Ferdinand Marcos's regime. She was not only a first lady, but she also held various government positions, including serving as governor of Metro Manila and minister of human settlements. Imelda took an active role in the regime's propaganda efforts and international diplomacy, portraying herself as a cultural ambassador and securing diplomatic ties with powerful nations. Her vision of beautification projects in Manila, like extravagant infrastructure, was intended to create an image of progress and modernity, although many people saw this as wasteful. In her opinion, creating beauty was uplifting and inspiring. Imelda once said, "It's shallow people who think beauty is frivolous or excessive. If you're bringing beauty and God, you're enriching the country. Rice feeds the body, books feed the mind, beauty feeds the soul. It is one thing I can really be proud of and stand tall in the world." So Imelda said that. Despite the political mastery that we just discussed, both women were heavily scapegoated for the failures of their regimes. Though we know now that they were not the sole architects of the problems facing their countries. Marie Antoinette was often blamed for the financial crises that gripped her nation, while King Louis's government made the critical political and financial decisions. Marie's spending and perceived political meddling made her a target for public anger. She was often portrayed in political cartoons as indifferent to the suffering of French people. Her Austrian heritage also made her an outsider in the eyes of many French citizens, compounding her negative image. Likewise, Imelda Marcos became a convenient symbol of the corruption and excesses of the Marcos dictatorship. While her husband Ferdinand Marcos was responsible for the dictatorship, martial law, and widespread human rights abuses, Imelda's personal extravagance became the most visible representation of the regime's corruption. She was seen as a powerful political figure in her own right, but she was often portrayed as the face of the Marcos family, overshadowing her husband's direct role in political repression. For both women, their image as exorbitant and out of touch was used to channel public resentment towards the regimes that they represented. The dramatic fall from grace experienced by both Marie Antoinette and Imelda Marcos further cements their similarities. The French Revolution in 1789 was the beginning of the end for Marie Antoinette and the monarchy. By 1793, we know she was executed for her alleged crimes. Obviously, a long time later, but in 1986, so Marie Antoinette executed 1793, 1986, the Marcos regime was toppled by the People Power Revolution. So for Imelda and Ferdinand, they fled to the Philippines and went into exile in Hawaii. While she eventually made her way back to the country, Imelda's legacy remains controversial, and many Filipinos see her as a reminder of the dictatorship's corruption. Both women experienced a rapid and dramatic fall from power as their countries rejected the regimes that they represented. So, all in all, these women's lives serve as a powerful symbol, both of them, of how political figures can be, you know, become detached from the realities faced by their people, and how that disconnect can contribute to their ultimate undoing. Imelda actually famously said this quote, "People say I'm extravagant because I want to be surrounded by beauty, but tell me, who wants to be surrounded by garbage?" It highlights the level of detachment. That quote itself, like, who wants to be surrounded by garbage? You know, people can't really control that sometimes, you know, Imelda? People can't control that. But it just, you know, sometimes it highlights, things like this highlight the level of detachment that's, you know, seen in both of these women's lives. I'm sure, you know, Marie would have maybe said something similar. In both cases, their stories have left enduring legacies, cautionary tales of excess and power, and the dangers of ruling without understanding or empathy for the people that they govern. So, you know, you can say what you want about Marie Antoinette and how, you know, she was a style icon. She was a trendsetter. Same with Imelda Marcos, like the love of shoes is, of course, an interesting piece to their stories, right? Like that was something that caught my attention when I was first reading about Imelda Marcos was the bulletproof bra of it all and all the shoes. But then when you kind of read into it, you peel back the layers a bit more and realize all the, you know, the detachment from reality that there is there. Of course, I don't know everything there is to know about Imelda Marcos today and how she, you know, sought to maybe turn her life around because she had the chance to. Marie Antoinette, of course, was executed before she really had a chance to reinvent herself. And of course, it was a different time. Like for a woman, you know, what was really going to happen after that? Like if she were to have lived or been allowed to live rather. Anyway, just really interesting. I was reading about Imelda. I was like, there is a parallel here that needs to be made. And I thought this would be the perfect place to do it in our last episode of season one of Found Objects. So, guys, wow, what a journey. What a journey this has been so far. Season one, it has been such a pleasure to bring you all these stories. Thank you for listening. Thank you for loving the tales and for sitting with me and learning, because really this has just, you know, brought me so much joy these past few months. I cannot speak. Sorry, I've done a lot of speaking today. These past few months and, you know, these episodes, I just hope you love them as much as I have loved making them for you. And of course, our story is not over. We will continue on with more creations in the Found Objects universe. So definitely go check out the Instagram Found Objects Podcast. Follow us over there. I will be posting updates on what is next for Found Objects, the next season of it all, over on Instagram. So definitely stay tuned over there if you want any updates. And guys, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to the last episode of season one here before we take a break. And yeah, I guess one final time, I'll say it, guys. Things aren't always as they appear. Goodbye. This episode was produced, edited, and told by Katie Bellotti. Research by Sarah Schilling. Podcast artwork by Siri Devlin. Follow us on Instagram at Found Objects Podcast. Tune in next Wednesday for a new episode. Goodbye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.